Gargoyle, if you could be a superhero, who would you be? If you could be any superhero?
I would be Mimic.
Yeah?
Yeah, from the early X-Men comics, like X-Men issue 18.
Yeah.
Mimic, yeah, the ability to mimic the powers of other superheroes. Like, if I'm the, you know, unless we're living in a world where I'm the only superhero, at which point, then...
It'd be a worthless power.
That would be a totally... I mean, who knows? I might have that power right now. I am Mimic, and I just have never met another superhero, so huh. I mean, but yeah, that would in a world with superheroes, that would be the way to go. What would your... If you were a superhero, who would you be?
I'd be Super Size.
The fuck is that?
My power would be is I would go around saving fast food patrons from their own self-control.
That sounds like a supervillain's power.
It may be a supervillain.
This is Junk Food Cinema.
Hi, this is Dick Miller. You're listening to Junk Food Cinema on Film School Rejects. Who are these guys?
Good day and good burger to you all. Welcome to another thick and syrupy episode of Junk Food Cinema right here on FilmSchoolRejects.com. This is the weekly cult and exploitation film cast that never, ever trims the fat. I am your host, Brian Salisbury, the Sharktopus Slayer, and I am joined by my friend and co-host, the man who would be King Ralph, novelist slash screenwriter, Mr. C. Robert Cargill.
Why the fuck did you make me think of that movie?
I don't know, because that's what I do. I like doing that in intros. Like
King Ralph, really? That's...
In the same intro with Good Burger, like two movies that nobody wanted to think about. That is my power, to ruin people's days. I may be a supervillain. That may be
May.
May?
What did he mean, May? If you had superpowers, you would be a fucking supervillain. You might not be Magneto.
No.
But you'd definitely be like Crusher Creel.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. That's what my mom used to say. I want to remind you that Junk Food Cinema is available on iTunes. And if you go there, why not give us a 5-star rating and leave a review? We really appreciate those. We're also available on Stitcher, and you can follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema, or you can like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema. And please do use those Amazon links that we will have up on the page here. Even every time you go there, even if you don't buy that item, as long as you got to Amazon via our link, anything you buy supports us, and we really appreciate that.
And this is an episode where we are going to stress you going to rent or purchase these films, because first of all, you should fucking see them, and second of all, these are guys who definitely can use the support and use their films being passed around, because these people are way too fucking talented to still not be mainstream.
Agreed. And we are continuing through our exploration of modern junk food masters this month, and this week we are focusing on a director actor team who prove that America does not have the market cornered when it comes to modern cult genre flicks. I am speaking, of course, of Ernesto Diaz Espinosa and Marco Zaror.
Fuck yes.
And I can hear a lot of the audience going, what? Who? Yes, again, these episodes we've been doing this month, a lot of the things we've been talking about are films that we've seen at film festivals. And these guys...
Well, we've been... But so far, and usually, we talk about American films. We talk about mainstream films. We do not talk about foreign made films.
Not
typically.
A lot. Not a lot.
And here, these are Chilean action comedies.
Yes.
For the most part.
For the most part, yeah. Now, Ernesto and Marco are two guys that, when they came to Fantastic Fest in 2007, they brought two movies. They brought their first and second movie.
Yes.
Very rare occurrence.
Well, because the first movie didn't really have a lot of traction. The second movie, they started passing around to festivals, got into a festival, and they said, hey, we have this other movie we just made. Will you watch that? And loved that, and said, yeah, we'll program both of it. So when we first got exposed to Ernesto and Marco, we got a double fucking dose.
Absolutely.
And we got an amazing double fucking dose.
And the reaction from the crowd at Fantastic Fest was so overwhelming that these guys now make, and they've said this, I'm not projecting.
No.
They've said this specifically. They now make movies to bring to Fantastic Fest.
Yeah, they looked at the timing When they wanted to make another film, they said, oh shit, we're approaching the cutoff date for Fantastic Fest. If we want to make a movie and go to America, we need to do this now. And so they went and made their third film specifically to get into Fantastic Fest. Like, that was the whole point to it. And I think the third film is actually your favorite.
The third film might be. It's very close with the very first of theirs that I saw as my favorite of their work. But we'll get to that in just a second. I want to talk a little bit about Marcos Aurora for a second. Marcos Aurora is a guy you may have accidentally already seen and not even known it, because Marco got his start as Dwayne the Rock Johnson stunt double on a little 2003 film called The Rundown.
Yeah.
Which is a fantastic movie.
Yes, it is. The Rundown. You know, The Rundown's one, and here's your you know,
drinking
drink alert.
Game? Yeah.
Your drinking game alert. The Rundown's probably something that we should do an episode on. It's one that doesn't get mentioned often enough, and man, is that a fucking great, fun junk food movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, he got his start as a stand-in and a stuntman, and then continued to do that for a while.
I'm just thinking maybe we should do an episode where we compare, we do side by side with The Rundown and The Midnight Rundown. Now, Marco, who again was started off in the business as being the stunt double for The Rock in The Rundown, was friends since high school with a filmmaker back in his home country of Chile named Ernesto Diaz Espinosa. And the two of them were very much in love with exploitation films. They were in love with people like Bruce Lee and Jean-Claude Van Damme. And Ernesto was a big David Lynch fan. So they spent a lot of their time watching movies, talking about movies, and they plan to make this movie together. It was going to be sort of a live-action anime fantasy, and it was called Kiltro. And Kiltro is the first movie that they made together, the first film they brought to Fantastic Fest by a hair. I think it showed like one day before the other one. But it is also the first movie we're going to talk about today is Kiltro.
Now, the thing about Kiltro, first of all, of these movies, Kiltro's still my favorite. I love all of them. Kiltro's my favorite, though.
That's really surprising because it's actually my least favorite, which is not to say it's bad. Yeah. I'm not saying it's a bad film by any stretch of the imagination. But I saw it right after their second film, Mirage Man, which we're going to talk about in a minute. And the two movies, I loved Mirage Man so much that when I saw Kiltro, it just felt like, okay, it's also good.
Well, I love them all. That's the thing.
Yeah, they're all
good.
But
the thing about Kiltro is Ernesto's Kill Bill. And it's not him aping Kill Bill. It's him go... What I mean by that is it is him making a movie in which it's all of his influences. It's him... riffing on all of the movies that he grew up in, grew up with. And what's so fascinating about it is we're watching, you know, a Chilean make a Chilean language movie about his experiences watching the films from other cultures, just as we had ours. And that's what I think really puts a different spin on it. Whereas you saw a number of American directors go and make like their versions of Pulp Fiction after Pulp Fiction came out, their versions of Kill Bill when Kill Bill came out. This is a foreigner's take on that same kind of formula.
Sure, yeah,
and it's so much fun. And what I really love about this movie is I think this is the most fun character that Marco has ever been able to play.
Yeah.
And I just find him so fucking endearing. He's always endearing in all the movies.
Well,
and we're going to go into that.
And it's funny because some in the later movies that we're going to talk about, he actually gives up that. Like, he actually opts to play characters that aren't so endearing, but he still manages to be endearing because Marco's a roar. But I will say this. He definitely has the best worst haircut in this movie of any film that he was ever in with Ernesto.
Deliberately.
He's got this really awful stringy mullet kind of thing going on, which I don't know Chilean culture well enough to say whether that might have been in fashion in 2006 or whether it was a deliberate thing to be like, oh, well, he's obviously some kind of weirdo. It could have been just the go-to haircut in Santiago in 2006. I don't know shit.
Yeah, but so this is a fun, goofy, really funny kung fu revenge movie.
Absolutely.
And what is not awesome about that? I mean, that's really the thing is, and that's one of the other elements that I love about this more than any of the other films is, you guys know, you know, in my heart of hearts, revenge movies are my absolute favorite.
Which is definitely going to come up next week as well. We'll get to that.
And this is really revengey, and it's revengey in the best way. And Marco is just this goofy idiot who's just really good at one thing, and
it's
that's
kicking.
And it's kicking ass, and he kicks so much ass, and just the visual palette that Ernesto's playing around with in this film, it's just so evocative of Shaw Brothers movies and of so much 70s exploitation cinema and 80s. And that was the thing, is unlike, you know, like Kill Bill, Ernesto actually draws from 80s stuff as well, because he's closer to my age than he is Quentin's age, and so the movies that he's drawing from are 70s and 80s, and so you see this really broad, very different range of influences that just creates a really fun movie. It does not feel like a pastiche of Kill Bill. It feels like it's from the same kind of universe, the same kind of, the best way to compare it is it's like Doomsday, which we've talked about previously, mm-hmm. which is Doomsday also a grindhouse, a Kill Bill of sorts, which was, here's all of this director's
Neil Marshall.
All of Neil Marshall's influences together in one movie, but they're all different influences because they're early 80s influences. So this is very much drawn from a different set of stuff. Just happens to also include Shaw Brothers, and it's so fun, and it's just a fun, immersive universe. All three of the other films, they all do something different, but they all exist in definitive universes. Definitely. And they're like, I'm trying to make this kind of movie. I'm trying to make this kind of movie. Kiltro is, I'm trying to make a movie about my love of movies and without mentioning the movies. And it's so great how he does it. And that's why it really connects with me, because as a film lover, it's me watching this guy share his passion, thinking that I'm only get, because it really feels like a movie of a guy who's like, I'm only ever going to get to make one movie. Nobody's ever going to give me the money to do this again. So fuck it. I'm just going to go all out and make a movie about my love of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And then it tipped off a career of making many other films.
Well, and that's a great thing about Ernesto, is that each film, like you said, it takes place in a very separate universe. And those universes are each their own love letter to a different genre. I mean, we have the martial arts film with this. We got superhero movies. We got spy movies. Like, everything that he was in love with gets its own little... It's very much the way kind of Tarantino worked at the beginning. It was like heist movies, and I like blaxploitation movies. I'm going to make that kind of movie. I like martial arts movies. I'm going to make Kill Bill. I like carsploitation movies. I'm going to make Death Proof, which I still think is very underrated. Anyway, so Ernesto is working kind of along those same lines, where every single movie he makes exists in a different genre, but exists in a different genre that he is wholly in love with. And when we get to the end of this episode, I want to talk about something I know he's a big fan of that I hope he gets to make that we haven't seen from him yet. But going back to Kiltro for a second, one of the things that's really fun to watch is they come up with this. First of all, the story is about this street tough played by Mark Rosaror, who's kind of, you know, we mentioned he's endearing. At the beginning of the movie, they try really hard to sell him as an asshole, because he's the kind of guy who's in love with this girl.
And an idiot.
He's in love with this girl and rescues her from rapists. So you're like, oh, awesome. Great guy. But then he starts beating up anybody who ever shows interest in her, because he can't stand the idea of her being with anybody else.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, you moron. But then he ends up being trained by a mystical dwarf named Nick Knack, to take on Max Kalba, the evil martial arts gang leader who's moved into town. And the way he does that is by donning this, like, painted-on mask and these blades that are in his heels to just cut through armies of minions to get to Max Kalba and rescue the girl that he's always loved. So it's very much an old-school, in terms of plot, an old-school martial arts Shaw Brothers-type movie. But it's just so much fun to watch him spin kick. Because one of the things... If you've never seen one of these movies, one of the things you might not know about Marcos Aurora is he is scary talented when it comes to martial arts. Like, he's not just technically proficient. That guy will stand... there's a video of him where, when he accepted his award for Mandrill at Fantastic Fest for Best Actor, on stage, he just did this thing where he was standing, jumped, and did, like, three flips in the air and landed perfectly. Yeah, it's frightening to watch.
He's one of those guys who'll have... He does the William Tell trick, but with kicks.
We'll get to that in a second as well. I definitely want to talk about that. But yeah, he's so good at scary.
But not only is he so good of a martial artist, he also, and this is one of the things we need to stress, why we're talking, that Ernesto has made 6 films now, I believe. We're going to talk about 4 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And because we want to talk about the ones with him and Marco, because what's interesting about Ernesto and Marco is Ernesto... shoots the movies, edits the movies, does all this stuff on it. But he always entrusts Marco to do
the fight choreography.
The fight choreography, mm-hmm. because he is amazing at it. When Robert Rodriguez talked to Harry Knowles about working on the second Machete, Harry was just like, "How come you've never worked with Marco Zaror yet?" And he's like, Marcos Aurora, and he showed him the movies, and he brought up Marcos Aurora to do that. And reportedly, from what I heard from people who worked on the film, there was a moment in which Marco was like, where Robert was like, "Oh, hey, well, okay, so I want the scene to do this and this with, you know, the action, and I want you to hit him and that." And Marco goes, "Oh, that's cool, but what if, and I'm just saying, if you don't mind, what if I do this thing, we have him do that, blah, blah, blah," and it completely reformats the scene. And Robert's like, "That would be fucking amazing. You could do that." He's like, "Yeah." And then just went, and so then Robert was just like, "We're going to have you do a lot of this fight choreography." And his fight choreography is amazing. None of the films ever fail to impress. Like, it's gotten to a point, like, I remember when we saw the fourth one, and we'll get to that soon, but I remember running into Marco afterwards, Marco and Ernesto afterwards. They're like, "So what did you think?" I was like, "Oh, dude, I loved it. It was so much fun. It's great." And talked about, you know, various story stuff that I loved and blah, blah, blah. And Marco was like, but what did you think of the fights?" And I was like, "Marco, how many times do I have to tell you that your shit's fucking awesome?" I mean, yeah, it's a Marco's Aurora fight scene. Of course it's fucking amazing. Like, true. You guys always, you never bore me, and it never gets to the point where it's like, "Really, Marco, you're doing that again?" Because he's always trying to push himself, always trying to push his guys and try to do something different. Like with the fourth film, every film he tries to ramp up what he does, and he's going to get to a point where it's like, dude, you can't really ramp
that up
anymore.
You would have to actually kill someone to exceed yourself. At a certain point, it's going
to
get that
you'd
way.
Have to start making films in Thailand, because as we know,
life is cheap in Thailand.
Yes.
Absolutely. And my favorite moment in Kill Tro is actually where Marco gets to display his love of movies. There's a scene where he deliberately takes out nunchucks and is very presentational with them before he uses them. It looks exactly like Bruce Lee in Into the Dragon.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, "Oh, you got your moment to have your love letter to Bruce Lee. That's amazing." The only thing that kind of... Again, I think Kill Tro is a good movie, and I really like it. The only thing that kind of keeps me from setting it with the other ones is that I think there's a little too much wire work in it. And that's something that we don't see a lot in their future movies. But there's a lot of... And I again, we're talking about a movie that's harkening back to Shaw Brothers.
Yes.
So I get that. But when you talk about two guys who, from here on out, for the rest of the conversations we're going to have, the impressive thing is what they're able to achieve without wires.
Well, they deliberately set out, we're saying we're never doing wire work again. Like, yeah. The only way we're going to have people recognize these movies is if we go all out and do everything in camera, do everything naturally, and impress people with the physicality of what Marco can do. And that, sure enough, that got them the attention.
Yeah.
And that leads us to
Mirage Man, which was the other film they brought to the 2007 Fantastic Fest.
It's a low budget superhero movie.
Imagine if when Batman began, Bruce Wayne had no money. If he had all of the drive and even more of the talent, but no bankroll whatsoever.
That's Mirage Man.
That is Mirage Man. And here's the other thing about why this one is neck and neck for my favorite and why Kill Tro is not so much. It has to do specifically with, like we said, each movie they make is a love letter to a different genre. Superhero movies are far closer to my heart than Shaw Brothers movies are. And I think really that's, again, it's not a knock against them as filmmakers, him as a filmmaker or Marco as a stunt coordinator to say that Kill Tro is not my favorite. It's just, it's playing in a sandbox that I don't have a lot of personal affiliation with. Whereas Mirage Man with the superhero movies, even in 2007, I was like, "Oh my God, this is so great. I'm so invested in this," and it's specifically because Marco plays a character who, in his alter ego, in his normal everyday life, is such a sweet guy, and is so, his quest, the reason he's doing this in the first place, like, your heart just immediately goes out to him. And then when he puts that suit on, it's terrifying. Like, he hits people so fast that the first time I saw this, there was a scene where he punched a guy and I couldn't figure out why the guy fell over. I had to, like, later go back when I got the DVD and rewind it to actually see the contact of his fist. He moves that quickly.
And the brilliance of Mirage Man and why it really just kind of captures and captivates everyone is that, and everyone early on, was that there were a lot of tracking shots in this movie. There's a lot of long takes in this film in which you watch Marcus Aurora run through a whole group of guys executing fight choreography perfectly. And it is just brilliant and brutal. And it's not the fast cutting kind of, I can't tell what's going on. It's a, no, we're going to take 30 seconds to a minute for each shot here while you watch Marcus Aurora kick the shit out of people. Yeah. And the interesting camera stuff will be the camera cleverly moving around to keep us watching and always able to view the hit. And
that's where you see how invested Marcus Aurora is in the fight choreography and how much of a professional he is. Because with those type of shots, if one thing doesn't work, they have to redo the whole fucking thing.
You have to do the whole shot. They do not have the money or the team to go ahead and do the kind of technical cleanup that a lot of movies have. You know, a lot of those shots that a lot of movies that, you know, particularly like something like Birdman, where, you know, it all looks like it's one take for most of it. A lot of those takes are strung together digitally. They don't really do them all in one take. These guys didn't have that kind of technical background. These takes are really fucking legit. So it is okay, let's do it again. Back to one.
Yep.
Everyone who just got hit, get back up. Shake it off.
And the comedy that Cargill mentioned before is so well utilized in Mirage Man.
Maybe, oh, yeah.
Maybe better than any other movie they've ever done. My favorite scene happens because you realize this is a guy who has no idea how to be a superhero. He just knows that he wants to do good in his community, so he makes his costume himself, has no idea how to make it, it looks kind of ridiculous, and then there's a scene where he first sees, like, okay, there's crime, cool, and goes over here and he changes and puts on the costume, and he goes and kicks the shit out of everybody, and then he goes back to put on his civilian clothes, and they're gone. Someone has stolen them. So he is trying to figure out how he's going to get back home, and he wants to tag along with these garbage truck. With this garbage truck, he's like, hey, can you give me a lift? They make him work. So he's in costume, going from house to house, picking up garbage. And it's like just the daily pitfalls of trying to logistically be a superhero. And it's hilarious.
Yeah. And that's the thing is both of these guys are incredibly smart. And so they really weave together these fun, clever movies that are never stupid. I mean, that's the thing is that, you know, they're making genre, they're referencing genre. Every single film is their attempt to, you know, do a different type of movie. But every time they try desperately to make a great movie, they never kick back and just go, you know, we're allowed to get away with this. It's this kind of movie. So who's going to give a shit? They give a shit. And so, yeah, you have a superhero movie that is trying to be on every level as good as any superhero movie can be on a shoestring budget made in Chile.
It was the first Chilean superhero movie. It has that distinction, which also means it's the best Chilean superhero movie.
It really is.
And it really is so much fun to watch. And the movie has these very interesting, like this interesting structure where it's like, he tries really hard. It seems like he's succeeding, and then he fails, and then he literally like comes. They have these cards on the screen that's like, okay, the siege on the bad guy's mansion, part two, because the first time didn't work. And there's a reporter who's helping him out, and then there's just all of these fun elements that come together really well. But the heart and soul of the movie is Marcus Aurora and why he's doing this in the first place. Like all the stunts, all of the great martial arts, all of the completely daring cinematography. All of that takes a back seat to, and this is what's really impressive about Marco, is as great as he is as a martial artist, it's his character and his performance in this movie that makes it work. Yeah. And he does an amazing job with it. And this was the collaboration, the first thing I saw, one of the first movies I ever saw at the first Fantastic Fest I went to. And I was like, this is why I wanted to come to a film fest. There is no way I would have heard about this movie otherwise.
Yeah.
Luckily for Marco and Ernesto, Magnolia picked this movie up and released it on DVD, and they actually had a pretty good relationship with Magnolia for a while, which is why these things are available, guys. So definitely, when we put those links up, go check them out, because Mirage Man is one you definitely do not want to miss if you're looking at the catalog of Ernesto and Marco.
Yeah.
And from there, we're going to move on to the third film, which
was made exclusively for Fantastic Fest.
It was.
And they even, I mean, this is, we mentioned that because they literally stood up on stage and said, hey, the only reason, I mean, we love making movies. We always want to make movies. But the reason we made this movie and made it when we did was we realized we were running out of time and we needed to have something to come back here because we needed an excuse to come back and show a movie. And so they made Mandrill.
Mandrill is the first time that Marcos Aurora is playing a character who... They're not trying to sell you as the underdog, the guy who's going to rise above the odds and succeed no matter what. He's a fucking cold-blooded bounty hunter in this movie, and he's looking for the guy who killed his parents, who happens to now be on the mob shit list, so he's more than happy to take the contract on the guy's life. And the opening of this film tells you everything you need to know about exactly what it is that Ernesto is paying tribute to in the movie. The beginning of this film is wholesale lifted from the beginning of Diamonds Are Forever.
Yeah, no, this is a Chilean James Bond movie.
It absolutely is a Chilean James Bond film. And if that alone doesn't excite you to see this, I don't know what to say to you.
If the idea of a Chilean James Bond movie doesn't excite you at all, then what the fuck are you doing listening to us?
Yeah, I don't know why you would still be here.
We're not pretty. We don't have great voices. You know, I sound like fucking Danny Bonaducci.
I was going to say...
I have that Danny Bonaducci-ness to me.
You're a Danny Bonaduce.
I'm the Bonaduce.
The Bonaduce.
2.0.
wasn't that an Australian horror film, The Bonaduce?
I think so.
Yeah.
It was not a very good one.
Well, it was at first, and then it grew up, and then nobody cared anymore.
So
what were we talking about? Mandrill.
Mandrill.
Yes, of course. Tangents, they're our favorite. Yes, so Mandrill, again, one of the things I love so much about it is that Marco is playing a completely different type of character. And as much as we end up liking him anyway, because he's just got that kind of screen presence and his character does some things that are... It has some interesting moral conflicts. He's not a guy at the beginning that you're like, oh, I hope he succeeds. All the chips are stacked against him. It's like, no, if the chips are stacked against him, he's just going to pull out a 45 and blow that stack of chips away.
Yeah. Now, see, the thing is so here's where things start really changing. Like, Kiltro and Mirage Man have a lot in common. They're really both kind of living in separate universes. And in both movies, Zaror plays kind of an idiot. Here, he's not an idiot. He's not a moron in this movie. He's socially awkward, and that's where the comedy comes from. Mm-hmm. But this is where they change it up, where it's like, okay, this isn't his shtick. Like, his shtick isn't playing, I'm the lovable idiot who's great at kung fu. It's the, you know, it's, I'm playing a different character each time. And Marco sinks himself into this character and is really, really gets to play cool, suave, and yet at times just socially absurd.
I think in my original review, I called him a suave agent of mayhem. Because that's the, like, when he walks into a room, everything's going to get destroyed. And the comedy, again, yes, very much is, some of it is completely accidental. Like, some of it is just a translation thing. Like, one of my favorite unintentional jokes in this movie is he's looking for a guy named Waldo at the beginning. So he keeps saying, ¿Dónde está Waldo? He's saying, where's Waldo, over and over again, and American audiences thought that was hilarious, and Ernesto was like, why is that funny? And I had to explain to him, like, in America, Where's Waldo is a children's book where you're looking for a guy in a striped shirt who's hidden amongst an I Spy picture, and he's just like, well, this is a spy picture. And I'm like, no, not a spy. Okay, let me try this a different way. so it was just, it was like, a lot of the comedy in this is unintentional. However, the intentionally funny bits...
For those of you playing along with the home game in the UK, we're talking about Where's Wally?
Oh, yes, that's right. Where's Wally? One of the intentionally funny bits in this movie that kind of comes out of left field and I love so much is there's a scene where Ernesto, the moral conflict of the movie is that Ernesto, playing a character named Antonio, is looking for the guy that killed his parents. And he's the one that is on the mob shit list that Antonio is far too happy to take the contract and he's going to kill him. But then he falls in love with the mob boss's daughter and he has to make the decision of, like, do I break her heart and make her an orphan, or, you know, do I pass on the revenge that I've been trying to get since I was a little boy? And the flashback sequences to his parents' murder are very... I think this is where the David Lynch influence on Ernesto is really clear. It's like really nightmarish, like it's a dream, almost like a dream sequence, except it's a memory. And it's just really unsettling, and I really like that about it. But there's a scene where they're out together, and Marco decides to dance. And Marco can dance, but something about watching a mafia or watching a cold-blooded bounty hunter slash hitman bust a move is just very odd. It was something
and kind of fucking hilarious.
And kind of fucking hilarious. It reminds me a lot of when Michael Madsen is dancing around to Stuck in the Middle in Reservoir Dogs. You're just like, I mean, this is funny, but
it's, or every time Sam Rockwell dances.
Yes, every time Sam Rockwell dances, and it works so well. And the other thing to talk about with Mandrill is not just the influences of James Bond, but the influences of 70s exploitation films. Because specifically, what this movie is interested in are the James Bond films of the 70s, and they parlay that, they dovetail off of that into this celebration of 70s cult movies in general. In fact, they invent their own 70s cult figure called John Colt, C-O-L-T.
Yeah.
And his movies, they talk about how they inspired Antonio to become a badass, to become a bounty hunter. So, and then every part of the movie has these really, like, colorful 70s chapter break cards that come up on the screen, and there's a very, what they call, like, a waka waka guitar doing the score, and it just feels very 70s. So the whole time, we're watching a James Bond film, but we're specifically watching a 70s James Bond film.
Yeah.
And I think those two things together really give this film a unique flavor, as do the fight sequences.
Oh, yes.
Because, again, we've talked about how good Marcos Arroyo is, both as a martial artist himself and as a choreographer. I truly believe that the fight sequences in Mandrill are his best work, are his absolute best work.
Maybe.
Which, what would you say is his best work?
Redeemer.
Really?
Redeemer, we'll talk about Redeemer in a minute, but he does something very different in Redeemer than he's done in any of his other films, because Marco's always trying to push himself further with each movie and alter the styles they're playing around with and the way they do it and what they do. And the thing is, yeah, some of the fight scenes in Mandrill are, they're even better than some of the amazing tracking shots in fucking Mirage Man. But
which is no small praise.
It's not like, oh, yeah, no, it was a light speed jump because he wasn't all that. No. It's fucking, it's kind of a hard call because these are so good and the differences are so marginal, and you have to really be paying attention to what he's doing. You have to be a fan of martial arts. You have to be a fan of these kinds of movies to really even notice that there's much of a difference. Your average audience would just be like, he's always badass and they're all the same. And it's like, go fuck yourself. They're not.
That is typically how we respond to
that
most
is our
challenges.
Response. Yes. Yeah. The action scenes are really, really great here.
They are, and I think part of it is this. Part of it is that all of those references, all those clips we see of the John Colt movies have really terrible martial arts.
Oh, yeah. Deliberately so.
Deliberately, to reference the low-budget action films of the 70s that would have, now would end up on, like, a 10-volume set DVD at half-price books that nobody's bought. But in those clips, the fighting is so hackneyed, and, like, you can tell that the guy's not even a mile within a punch, and they add that, like, slappy sound effect, and the guy goes flying. It's a great juxtaposition to the amazing fight sequences in the movie itself, in narrative prime.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's really great. But then he utilizes slow motion, and what's really impressive about that slow motion is when you consider, once again, that later on, and especially in this film, there are no wires. There is no wire work being utilized. And the confidence that Ernesto has in Marco, and the confidence that Marco has in his stunt team to do these things correctly without wires, and then to slow it down to the point that the audience can scrutinize every little movement, and it still looks this amazing, is, I think, what really pushes this over the top. Like, not only is he choreographing some amazing high-impact fights, but there's no wire work, and they're slowed down to the point that it's like they're daring you to find a note of falsity in those fights, and I just don't think it's there.
Yeah, it's, the thing is that Ernesto and Marco are both perfectionists. You've got a perfectionist director who wants to get it right, who never cuts corners and goes, this is fine. And you have a martial artist who never cuts corners. If he feels like you don't see the hit, like, that looks inauthentic, we're fucking doing it again. I don't care how fucking tired we are.
Yeah.
And they just keep doing it until they get it right.
I don't know. I just think both the scale and the the uniqueness of the way that they're shot and the way that they're framed. Like, I really do think that this is probably the best fight work that that Marco has done. And I think it does nothing but add to what is already a really fun movie. And Mandrill, it's really, you know, you're right. I don't know if Mandrill or Mirage Man is my favorite of their collaborations because they're both so good in their own way.
Yeah. I mean, every film is different, and that's the thing, is that every film has common threads, but every film, they try to make something different than what they made before. They don't like repeating themselves. They don't go, oh, that worked for us, so let's do that again, but do it this way. It's like, no. We made our big film lover revenge saving the girl movie. So let's make a superhero movie. Okay, well, we made a superhero movie that did really well because it really did well in Chile. And they went, let's make a spy movie. You know, let's make a 70s exploitation, James Bond movie. And then with the fourth movie, they said, let's make a gritty, raw kind of hitman movie. Let's make a dark, brooding, almost depressing kind of film that still has some comedy, but is let's go for the grit in this one. And they veer, and that's Redeemer.
Redeemer is such an interesting movie because, yeah, Marco once again is playing an even less traditional Marco Zaror character, which is so odd to say because I keep realizing that most of the people listening have no idea who we're talking about, what these movies are, but there is...
Yeah, some people are going to go out and watch four movies in a row and be like, I haven't seen any of them.
And they'll notice what I'm talking about. This is an even bigger break of the mold for what a Marco Zaror character is in an Ernesto Diaz Espinosa movie. This is a guy who was complete scum. He was a hired killer and did a lot of terrible things and is now working to try and save his own soul by making amends for the bad things that he's done in his life. It is the most morally complex and fascinating character that Marco Zaror has ever played.
And there is an element to this that just made me fall in love with it. One of the interesting things is this is about a hitman versus a hitman.
Like, yes.
This is hitman v. hitman. But our protagonist... The only real grounding thing to this protagonist is how deeply religious he is.
Yes.
And he's so deeply religious that he believes that what he's doing is wrong, but he's going to let God decide if he's going to go out and do the things that he's about to do. So he feels bad for it, but he's like, well, if God doesn't want me to do this, he will stop me. And so every day when he wakes up before he goes out to do these awful things, he puts a single bullet in a chamber of a gun, spins it, puts the gun to his head and pulls the trigger to find out if God wants him to go out and kill all these people.
It's very ceremonial. It's like a samurai rite of passage when he does it.
It is. And it's just like when you realize what's going on with that, you're just like, holy fuck. And then he proceeds to go out and kill a shit ton of fucking people.
Yeah.
And so when I talked earlier about how I think this one has the best fight scenes, it's because, you know, in the previous ones, they were looking for a grace in the choreography.
Yeah. And an elegance
to the choreography. And in this one, they're like, let's make it raw and dirty and hurt.
Yeah.
Let's spend more time focusing on, and they focus on a lot more grappling. There's a lot more of what MMA fans will recognize in these fights. It's not just, I hit you, I kick you, you go down. It's a lot more, we're grappling, you know, martial artists rolling around on the ground trying to subdue one another and kill one another in a dangerous grapple. And that change in the martial arts style makes for something we don't see in a lot of movies. I mean, that's just, that's one of the things that so draws people to watching MMA is just how realistic those fights are, where it's not like, okay, we have a set of rules of the type of things you can't do. It's not like watching boxing where it's like, yeah, that's nice, but you can't kick, or watching kickboxing, you go, yeah, that's nice, but you can't really grapple. The whole thing that started with MMA was, fuck it, no rules. We're going to put you in a cage. You can do whatever. You can kickbox. You can fucking wrestle. You can power move. is whatever the fuck you want to do. Jump off the cage if you want to. Mm-hmm. Do what you would do to kick the shit out of another person. And that's what Marco was trying to capture in this movie, and I think he captures it expertly.
And I think there's a personal, you know, they say a lot of the best art comes from pain. And I think there's a personal element to that, because Marco, after they made Mandrill, it was a period of time where he didn't know how he was going to make ends meet. And he considered going into MMA as a way to pay the bills. And part of that was, I don't want to say derailed, because I don't think it's ever what he really wanted to do, but that plan was changed by when Robert Rodriguez called him for Machete 2 and kind of shifted things a little bit.
A little bit. There's a little part of that story that is kind of important. He was worried about that, and then he was asked to be a spokesman for an energy drink company in Chile.
Right.
And he said, only if I can get a part of the profits. And so they negotiated, and he got a part piece of the company, became the spokesman. It exploded, yeah. And he became like a billionaire. Like he's now a Chilean billionaire, and then he's like, I don't have to work anymore. I can just kind of train all day and teach other people martial arts. And he kind of was like, I don't need to make movies anymore.
I will say, I asked him about that, because that was a rumor that was going around Fantastic Fest. He said that billionaire is an exaggeration.
Yes.
But that he is it's definitely made him more comfortable.
That's why I said like
a billionaire. But the point is that the MMA thing and how it gets incorporated in a Redeemer feels very raw, feels very, very brutally honest, because I feel like it was something that he was reluctantly almost pushed into, but then the way he utilizes it in Redeemer, and I will give you this, as much as I think Mandrill is his best work fight choreography-wise, Redeemer had the most moments where I just went, oh, that looked like it hurt a lot.
Yes.
And part of it is that they don't just utilize, like, there's some, like, bloody, violent weaponry. Like, parts of this movie look like a slasher film. Like, there's a thing with a boat motor that happens that I'm not going to go too much into, but let's just say things get messy in this movie in a way that we haven't seen from a collaboration from these two before, and I really love that.
Yeah.
And it's, again, I like the character a lot, and I like the structure of the Hitman v. Hitman.
And the villain. You know, the other Hitman, the Scorpion.
Yes.
Oh, he's such a good, nasty villain.
And he's kind of the guy that... The movie also features Noah Segan, who is an actor that we're both familiar with,
You're familiar with.
Yeah.
If you are out there and you haven't seen Looper and you don't know who Kid fucking Blue is,
yeah.
As soon as you're done here, go fucking watch Looper and then feel bad for yourself. Feel guilty. Feel shame, because I'm going to shame you for not having seen Looper, because Looper is fucking amazing.
And Noah's really good in it.
Noah's great in it. Noah is put up against, you know, some really heavyweight fucking actors and fucking steals scenes. He steals goddamn scenes from Jeff Daniels, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, seriously.
Like, Noah just fucking blows that you know, certain people off the screen.
He kills it.
Yeah, and here he's having a lot of fun.
He is playing this strange, coked-up American in Chile who's decided that he's going to try and be a boss and spends most
of the... He's going to be a Chilean drug lord.
He spends most of the movie butchering Spanish and just flying off the handle in a way that all of his rest of his men are just like, Jesus, fuck this gringo already. And you can tell he's having a blast with it. There's literally a scene where he's like doing a traditional Chilean dance and he looks ridiculous. And then he's like, I'm going to stop for a second, kill that motherfucker. And then goes back to dancing. It's just like,
And you can tell he's having a lot of fun. And it's is it the only English in any of these movies?
It may be, actually.
The only English in any of these movies is Noah. And and occasionally some of the people that are talking to Noah.
You're right. I think it is the only English. But they set him up to be the big bad, and then you realize that compared to the Scorpion, he's not even on they're not even on parallel levels whatsoever.
No. Like, he's so, and this guy is so in over his head, but is trying to be the boss and brought money down so people are working for him. But it's some of the only real comedy in this movie, because the rest of it's so fucking dark, which is smart.
Super
because
dark.
They know how to make, you know, these guys always want to make fun movies, and they're thinking of the audience, and they know it's like, look, we have to have some kind of fun, good goofiness here, mm-hmm. or else you're going to be really depressed by this movie, because the reason Zorora is trying to kill the scorpion is a really fucked up revenge movie kind of a thing. And it's pretty fucking grim. And when you when your protagonist is playing Russian roulette every goddamn morning,
yeah,
you gotta shine a little sunlight in
it's
there.
Like waffles, some Wheaties, they're gonna have some eggs. Oh, Russian roulette, it's all part of a balanced breakfast.
It really
for Marco Zorora. And yeah, Redeemer is probably their darkest movie. It's really hard for me to actually rank them because I love all these movies for different reasons because they do take place in different universes where they're celebrating different things. And each time they do, I feel like, again, this is kind of the thing we were talking about with Adam and Simon, is that I don't feel like they get better necessarily. They just keep trying to adapt and experiment and try different things.
No, they're moving sideways.
Yeah.
And they're doing amazing things and they're pushing themselves. I think the fight choreography gets better every time.
That is true. I will say I agree with that.
And it's because, and not because Marco's getting better, but because he sets kind of a level of here's what we need for this movie. And then the next time he's like, how do we beat that?
He's trying
how
to outdo himself. That? That's really what it is.
And Ernesto doesn't need to outdo himself because Ernesto is making really great films. The only way Ernesto's ever going to make a bigger hit, a bigger movie, is if somebody just gives him a lot of money and says, here's $100 million, Ernesto, go fucking nuts.
Yeah.
Just go and make some big splashy movie. And or heaven forbid, if James Wan is like, hot, I did my Furious 7 movie, I'm done, I'm moving on. If they could call up Ernesto and have him do a Furious, Fast and Furious movie, watching the amazing, crazy shit he would do with that. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the type of thing that are the only way Ernesto is going to make a bigger splash, because it's not that he's not making good enough movies. He's just making low budget foreign language movies.
And here's why I think that could potentially happen, because if you watch the last two Fast and Furious movies, there have been two. Fast 6 had Joe Taslim from The Raid. And Fast 7 or Furious 7 has is it Tony Jaa that's in? I think it's,
yes,
Tony Jaa. So they're already looking at international martial arts stars. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if Marco Zorora turns up in a later Fast and Furious movie. And if at that time they're also looking for a director, I'm just saying these two things could go hand in hand.
Yeah, no. The only thing, and I've talked to them about this several times, and it's one of the things I really think is they both speak English very well.
Yeah.
It's unlike many of the other situations where even, it took years before many of the biggest Hong Kong stars learn English. Chow Yun-fat,
Sammo Hung.
Sammo, yes, but I was actually going for Jackie Chan.
Oh, yeah.
Jet Li. All of them struggled for years with English. And
Jet Li struggled with English when he was in movies playing English or American characters.
Yeah, no. And it's not like you can really blame them.
No.
These guys who have dedicated their life to physicality and who have spent by the time, American cinema recognized these guys were all in their late 30s, early 40s, even, late 40s. It's like now we're learning English because, but with Marco showed up already knowing English, and I've talked to them, two or three times about it, that I really feel they need to do an English language film.
Yeah.
And that I would really like to see them do an English language film, because that is the type of thing that then would go on cable, would then, be able to be spread around, would then be able to be picked up by the indies and put in theaters as, look at this badass kung fu movie. Here's an indie kung fu movie. And people are like, there's an indie kung fu movie? Holy fuck. And then see this incredible martial arts,
mm-hmm,
and then just be like, who the fuck are these guys?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, Magnolia can go, oh, hey, did you love, from the director and star of, and it's like Marco Zorora movies.
Yeah.
And, they can offer a subtitled and a dubbed version. And then people are like, holy God. And then all of a sudden the studios are like, oh yes, we would love to have you guys come up and make a movie for us.
And if they don't want to do a martial arts film as their first English language movie, I alluded to this at the top of the show, I had a talk with Ernesto where he talked about one of the things that he's always really wanted to play around with, another type of film that he's always really loved, is the Bud Spencer and Terrence Hill comedies
The 70s. Oh, God. You know what? Why the fuck haven't we done an episode on that yet?
I don't know, and we will. Take a drink, everybody. But what I'm saying is, if they really want something for their first English language film that isn't martial arts, I would love to see Ernesto put a cast together and do his own version of a Bud Spencer, Terrence Hill movie, something like They Call Me Trinity, or
Crime
Busters.
Not Super Cop.
Miami Super Cops.
No,
that's a movie they're in together, though.
Yeah, but that's not the movie. Super Fuzz.
Super Fuzz.
Super Fuzz. That's the one I'm thinking of. Yeah, no, Super Fuzz was my introduction to those guys. Yeah, if they did something like Super Fuzz, just something, which of course is a cheap Italian superhero movie.
God, all of our worlds would just start smashing into each other. What would we do?
It would be kind of fucking awesome.
We would die a little bit. But yeah, whatever we need to do to put them on track to make a Bud Spencer, Terrence Hill type comedy, I will do it. I will give all, just take my money. Like, here's my wallet. Just fucking go. But yeah, these are two guys who, like Cargill said, are perfectionists that you may not have heard of, but that are doing amazing things in the world of independent genre film and foreign genre film. And they've completely changed the filmmaking culture in their country as well, which I think is just a remarkable feat. And I wait not so patiently for the next thing that they do together, whether I see that at Fantastic Fest or hopefully in my local theater. But Ernesto Diaz-Espinosa and Marcos Rohr, two absolute modern masters of junk food cinema.
Now, quick question. We just talked about Redeemer. Is Redeemer available yet? We saw it on the festival circuit.
Yeah, I'm not sure that it is. It was one of those that as soon as I started looking for it, thinking it would be available, I could not find it. Let me do a quick... It is not currently available. That is a real fucking shame.
So now that we've got you all excited about seeing Redeemer,
start making noise, guys. Start tweeting, start going on Facebook. Yeah, I want to fucking see Redeemer.
Go watch these three movies and then learn that you have a fourth movie coming and be like, holy fuck, and start making noise.
Well, that brings us to the junk food pairing of the show, which we got to go with the Kiwi energy drink that is promoted by and partially subsidizing Marcos Rohr himself. Kiwi, I will make this disclaimer, may not make you as fast, as powerful, or as talented as Marco, but it can give you a rush similar to the experience of watching an Ernesto Marco flick. I just want to say this right now. I can personally attest to the majesty that is Marcos Rohr's ability just on the fly as a martial artist, because last year at Fantastic Fest, I thought it would be a great idea, because there's a lot of beer at Fantastic Fest.
There's a lot of beer.
I've had the very good pleasure of, since their first two films arrived at Fantastic Fest, I've done the intro Q&A for almost every screening of almost every subsequent film that they brought, and it has been one of the high points of every Fantastic Fest for me, and just seeing those guys again. And at this most recent one for Redeemer, I thought, you know, it'd be fun, we should do some kind of demonstration, because many years ago, when they first brought their movies, there was a video of Marco in the lobby of the draft house kicking over the top of an employee's head. It was just a lot of them standing around. He's like, oh, look, I can do this. And they took a video. I thought, what if we did something like that in front of everybody before the screening to get them pumped up? And they had brought these cans of Kiwi. And I was like, well, what if you kick it off the top of my head? Which, again, Sober Brian would have been like, that's a fucking terrible idea. Do not do that.
But Sober Brian doesn't attend Fantastic
Fest. That is correct. So we set it up where I did this whole like bit where I was like, why don't you try and kick it out of my hand? And then he pretended like it was a last minute thing to go, oh no, let me put it on your head. And I stood in front of a couple hundred strangers while Marcos, I couldn't see him, he was behind me. And I just stood there frozen with this can on my head. And the first attempt, he kicked over the top of the can on the top of my head. So I just felt this, and I was terrified. I was like, oh, and before I could even react, he did another spin kick and knocked it beautifully right off the top of my head. It was an amazing, amazing moment. I will embed the video on this post, because you really need to see this guy fucking pull this off.
Had Marco missed, had he been having an off day, this podcast would not exist.
No, it would not. No, it would
be
absolutely
me talking, mumbling to myself in my office, having forgot to press record.
So Kiwi energy drinks, get yourself one and be almost as badass as Marco Rohr. Well, that's going to do it for our show. Thank you so much for listening. I want to let you guys know that you can find us on iTunes as well as on Stitcher. You can also follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema, or like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema. Cargill, where can people find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at Massawyrm, that's M-A-S-S-A-W-Y-R-M, or on Facebook at facebook.com/Massawyrm.
Nice. You can find me on Twitter at BryGuySalisbury. You can also find me on Facebook at my Facebook page, facebook.com/BryantSalisburyCritic. And definitely check out oneofus.net, my home away from home. A lot of great geek podcasts and blogs over there for every single geek tastes. All right, well, I'm going to end the show, so let me just go ahead and put one bullet in here and spin the cartridge, and we'll see if we'll have a show next week. So long, everybody!
Let God decide.